Good morning, everyone. This is Candace from Autism One Radio. You can find me on Twitter at CESDays. Today, as my guest, I have Greg Glaser. Did I say that right, Greg?
Yes, that's correct. Nice to meet you.
Greg is the general counsel for PIC. We're going to be talking about Physicians for Informed Consent today, and he's also a vaccine rights lawyer for California. And I want to let our listeners know that when Charity Dean of Santa Barbara County wanted to mine our students' medical files or educational files for medical exemptions, I called Greg. Greg came in and dealt with county supervisors and county council to get that straightened out. So good morning, Greg. Thank you for being with us today.
Yes, it's nice to be here. I'm glad to
I really want to tell you thank you for all that you did for Santa Barbara County and the whole state of California.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's also an ongoing project to protect privacy throughout California because the Departments of Public Health on a statewide basis and a local basis are continuing to test the limits of privacy when it comes to vaccination records.
Right. So you've been very helpful in kind of interpreting the law for school districts. If parents have a problem, we can call you and you might write a letter or direct us on how to deal with it. Tell us about PIC.
Sure. Yeah, I'm the general counsel for PIC, which is Physicians for Informed Consent. And we are a nonprofit organization, a health freedom organization in California, based in California. And we are a resource for doctors and scientists and families who are supporting informed consent in vaccination, which means that we are opposed to mandatory vaccination laws. And what we do is we provide primarily education through resources, resources for families, resources for doctors. That includes doctors who have questions about vaccination, questions about medical exemption, how to write a medical exemption. And for example, one of the things we have is a forum for doctors where they can interact with their colleagues to discuss and share resources about writing medical exemptions and looking for risk factors for vaccine injury, and then just discussing immunity generally. So that's one way that we support doctors, and then we also support families by providing them educational resources as well, and also referring them to doctors who are well versed in vaccination questions. You know, I think the experience for many families is that first they go to their primary care physician, who's just basically selling vaccination. You know, who's just selling drugs and surgery because that's pretty much how the system is set up. And when families go and they have questions about vaccination, they just get the standard line, which is vaccines are safe and effective. I mean, the doctor might as well just be saying that SAM is America's miracle meat. It is such a canned advertising slogan, and people are seeing through it. You know, the old line that vaccines are safe and effective, that is a joke. I don't think anybody really believes that anymore, but for some weird reason, it keeps being pushed around, just like the old advertising slogan, SAM, America's miracle meat. I mean, nobody believes it, but you just hear it, you know, on a daily basis, right? And so that's what's happening in America. And these families are seeking second opinions, and they want doctors who've actually researched vaccine injury, who have actually researched immunity, what immunity really is. And they want more information. And the doctors that are in our network, Physicians for Informed Consent, are leading in the field and being resources for additional information about vaccine risk and immunity, natural health, and integrative medicine.
So I just a few days ago, in the last few days, a document came out that said how much was paid out from vaccine court to vaccine injured families. So that right there, you know, we have proof that vaccines are not safe and effective for everyone. And it's funny that when Pan was, you know, talking to our legislators, he misled them in saying that vaccines were safe and effective. And we know that that's not the case for every person. Therefore, you know, full informed consent is extremely important. So, Greg, yeah. I was just on the site earlier today. So we can send our listeners to physiciansforinformedconsent.org, correct?
That's correct.
And you can become a member to support the cause. You can make a donation. You can be a Health Freedom member or a physician membership. There are several different levels of membership. So if we find doctors who are friendly to our cause to full informed consent, can we direct them to your website and have them join you? They would get support from you.
Yes. It's one of the best things that a doctor can do who is becoming aware of vaccination risk and increasing their knowledge on immunity, because they will be able to enter the network of other physicians within within PIC who are just so well-versed. I mean, we have doctors who are writing books in this field. And so it's a great way to gain access to not only that information, but also written resources that the doctor can use in their own clinical practice to protect patients from vaccine risk.
Now, the other day I got a call from my child's pediatrician, who we haven't been to we haven't had any well baby visits in at least 10 years. So I got a call from them saying that my child is due for their well child visit, you know. So what I'd really like to do is go over there, get my medical records, and fire that doctor, because I don't want CPS showing up at my door.
Yeah, and, you know, I counsel a lot of parents who have concerns about that very question, which is, how can I protect myself from the government knocking on my door and saying, you know, you're not raising your children according to the standard we have. And, of course, their standard is, you know, you give your child drugs. If the system says drugs, you give your child surgery if the system says surgery, because the system sells drugs and surgery, you know. And so parents want to know, how can they protect themselves? And the best way to protect yourself from that system is to step outside of it. And to do that, you need to name an integrative physician as your primary care physician. It is the number one thing you can do to protect yourself. You just choose an integrative physician to be your child's primary. And a lot of integrative physicians work in clinics. And so that means that they may not have access to the type of resources which may be a parent's main concern. Like, for example, if a child breaks their arm and they need an x-ray or something like that. But there are ways that you can still keep your integrative physician as your primary, but then also have access to emergency services. So that way, if you need to go to get an x-ray or something and you want that covered by health insurance, for example, there are programs you can put in place to do that. But many parents don't know that. They think that they just have to choose a primary care physician at a hospital because that's where the x-ray machine is. But that's not true. The best thing to do is to go outside of the hospital for your primary care physician. Get a physician who supports your best interest when it comes to healthcare. And, you know, so if you're holistic, you know, you should choose a holistically minded integrative doctor to be your child's primary, because that doctor is going to support you. They're going to stand behind you and provide not only the care you want, but also in the event that there ever is a knock on the door from someone, that doctor's going to support you. And that's going to be your number one defense. In fact, one doctor supporting you is worth more than 100 lawyers, because the system is set up around doctors. That, you know, if you have a doctor supporting you, if you have a primary care physician supporting you, you know, saying that this patient's making the right decisions, that's informing you about, you know, how about, you know, good health care, then
that's going to be your primary protection. And so, and I think a lot of parents don't put that together. They think that the best way to protect themselves is to just get a lawyer and fight, but that's actually not true. The first and foremost thing you can do is choose the right primary. Because once you choose the right primary care physician, then you make the lawyer's job easy. What a lawyer would take 100 hours to do with the wrong doctor, a lawyer can do in 30 minutes with the right doctor. So it's all about the primary.
Well, a lot of parents are concerned for insurance. Is insurance going to pay for that? But in my case, Greg, I would look for somebody that I would just pay cash to if my kids got sick and needed a doctor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think a lot of parents find that is, one way to approach healthcare on sort of a temporary basis. You know, and they think, well, we'll pay out of pocket, until we figure out what we want to do for long-term health insurance. Although some are comfortable with just paying out of pocket on an indefinite basis, which of course is fine. Sort of depends on your resources. There are programs available for insurance that incorporates alternative treatments.
Really?
So you can Google it. Just Google, holistic healthcare insurance, and you'll find companies that offer it.
Great. That's good to know. I had no idea.
Yeah, and the insurance will also cover those situations where you need emergency care. Like, let's say your son breaks his arm or something, you need to go to the ER and get a cast, or a special clinic to get a cast, and you need x-rays, stuff like that. Then, yeah, your insurance will cover situations like that. Go ahead.
Recently I had a situation where my kid had caught a bug and I kept him out of school for 3 days because he had a fever and I didn't want him to send him to school sick, And after the second day he was well. I mean, he wasn't well. He was still resting. His fever was gone, but I could tell he still didn't feel good. So I get a letter from the school saying, I need a doctor's note to bring my kid back to school. So I had to get my kid up. I didn't want to take him to the pediatrician that's been bullying me. So I found an osteopath in that practice that we visited, and she didn't say a word about, vaccines to us. But I don't feel that it's really necessary that I need a doctor's note if I'm going to keep my kid out for 3 days. I think that should be a parent's decision, and it seems like according to the law, if you have two witnesses that say your child is not well enough to attend school, that should be enough. And as it turns out, it's not the law, it's the school policy for my kid to have a doctor's note to come back to school. So
yeah,
that's another thing.
There is a California regulation on point there that says that a note from a physician is required in cases where the school needs to prove it. And that's basically for if the school has a reasonable belief there's some kind of, suspicious absence, something like that. But yeah, in the normal case, the school will take a note from a parent or from any doctor, whether it's a chiropractor or a naturopath. But yeah, and that regulation, by the way, which I mentioned, which requires a physician's note, and a physician refers to an MD or a DO only, that's just a regulation. So it doesn't actually trump the statute. And the statute's silent on what qualifies for an excused absence. So, we could defer to the evidence code, for example, that says that statement of one witness is sufficient to prove any fact in the state of California. But, I'm not sure that's going to be the defining standard. To my knowledge, it's never been tested in court, but I'd have to take a look.
Well, I did get, I have an ongoing relationship with the school admin because of my child's disability, and I've been very active. And they told me that all I really needed was to have the school nurse check him in when he got there. So they're pretty friendly towards me, but that's not how it is everywhere. So
right.
I threw a big fuss after I got that letter and went to them directly and said, I'm not going to do this. You're crazy. who are you to tell me? But, you know, they were flexible, and I became more flexible as well. So we got it all worked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I think it's important to be aware of your rights.
And another thing, Greg, you know, we really have to read the fine print when we put our kids in summer programs. For instance, I got something from the school. It's a fee-based college for kids, and they have cool classes like sewing and science and cooking and cool stuff, you know, a supplemental math program or whatever. And in the fine print, it says that I give my consent to an x-ray, examination, anesthetic, medical or surgical diagnosis or treatment and hospital care, which is deemed advisable and is rendered under the general or special supervision of any physician and surgeon licensed under the provision. So I would have to sign that to send my kid to this program. And to me, it tells me that it's a blanket consent for them to do anything they want to my child while my child is in this program. How do you interpret that?
Yeah, thank you for that question. My interpretation is that those consent forms are written by attorneys for the organization, and meaning like the summer camp. And they're written to protect the summer camp in the event that a disgruntled parent sues for bringing their child for emergency care. And so, which is rare, but you can find suits like that in the U.S. And so what I do, what I encourage parents to do who have concerns about those consent forms is you customize them. So you just highlight, the best thing you can do is always be present. Because as long as you're present with your child, then you can always just take them. So if any issue ever arises, you just take your child. You're not required to go to the ER or anything like that. You retain full control over your child's health and welfare when you are present. So, but if that's not even practical, because let's say they're at summer camp and they're away from you, well, they somehow need to strike a balance between, respecting your parental rights, meaning your right to make healthcare choices for your child, compared to the responsibility of the summer camp to provide emergency care for a child, because technically the summer camp could get sued if they didn't provide emergency care. And so how would they know what the parent wants or does not want? Maybe some parents do want, you know, like the best emergency care that could be provided by a hospital nearby. And so this consent form is a way to kind of get everyone on the same page with the plan of the summer camp in the event something comes up. But with that said, you can still customize the form. So what you do is you just highlight where you will be at all times. So, you know, you can highlight, I will always be available to, you know, within 1 hour of the summer camp. You know, just call me. I'll always be available by phone. Please call me with any questions.
So do not sign the consent. Do not sign it.
You can still sign it, but after you put in the qualifications that you want. And then, you know, you can also highlight in there that your first and primary preference is for, you know, holistic and natural remedies and non-emergency care until I get there. You know, things like that can kind of temper it. And then I also encourage parents, before they just send in this form, to call the administrator for the summer camp or whatever it is and just talk about what your concerns are, and then a good relationship with the staff can go far.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just really jaded. I'm very suspicious because, on every school campus, we have the bus that gives out vaccination, and the kids will get their eyes checked and a fluoride treatment. And, you know, this goes on in my town where I live, and I'm just very untrusting that bus isn't going to, you know, pull all the kids in and you know, do that. So I'm very suspicious, and I'm not very trusting. So So
I think that can serve you well. I mean, we're living in an incredibly dangerous and misguided world, which thinks that, you know, vaccination makes you clean. It thinks that fluoride is good for you. I mean, that is so backwards. I mean, history is going to judge modern medicine so harshly.
Yeah.
And, so in the meantime, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you have your guard up because that's going to keep your children safe.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I pulled my kid out of school. My girl is going to be 12, and California law says that they don't need parental consent to give my kid a shot at school. And all they have to do is coerce my child or use peer pressure, and she doesn't have to tell me. You know, the doctor doesn't have to ask me. So that's a big concern.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're opting for a traditional approach, which is homeschooling, traditional care, and exercising your parental rights. And I think that's really cool. And I think that as more parents do that, you know, that step out of the paradigm of, you know, one size fits all medicine and this sort of giving our children over to the nanny state in the hope that this, you know, this big brother is going to be benevolent. You know, I think more people opt out of that system, the more that it keeps the system in check.
So, Greg, I have another question for you. So with all these people pulling their kids out of the home school or out of school because of the forced vaccines at 7th and in kindergarten, I don't know. I did, but I don't know that other people will. I'm hoping they do. What happens if CPS does come to our door? Is it likely that they ever will? Or do we have to even open the door? Do we have to talk to them or present our child to them? What are the laws about that?
Sure. You have your traditional protections, meaning that you have Fourth Amendment privacy. So you don't have to let a government agent into your home unless they have a warrant to enter your home. And the exception, though, is that if there's an active felony in progress, then they can enter to, you know, or for example, if a child is in immediate danger, then they're allowed to enter even without a warrant. So, you know, the best thing that you can do, and of course we're speaking about, you know, this is just like message for parents out there who may have concerns about this. The best thing that the parents can do is to make sure that they have the right resources, like the right lawyer, the right primary care physician, you know, kind of on standby or on call in the event something happens. So, you know, most people don't have like a CPS defense lawyer who they're just like ready to call at the drop of a dime because we don't think in those terms. We don't expect a CPS to come to knock on our door. But if you have information, like let's say you get a letter from CPS and they're inquiring, like the first step has been initiated by CPS to look into you, well, that's a good time to start getting your ducks in, you know, ducks in a row. You know,
like if I don't take my child to that well baby visit.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, once you start, the way the system works, the way CPS system works is it works on complaints. So if someone files a complaint against you, then you're on the CPS radar. And the ones who file complaints are, it's basically three primary categories. Number one is the doctor. So if you go to Kaiser Permanente, for example, then they're gonna sell you drugs and surgery. And if you don't say yes to their drugs and surgery, then they're gonna turn you in. They're gonna say you're putting your child in danger because you don't like drugs and surgery. Or sometimes it's a disgruntled family member, or a disgruntled neighbor who says, you know, this parent's not, you know, they're letting your child play in the yard, and that's not it. It's like weird stuff, you know, every now and then. And CPS will say, okay, we'll follow up on that. The system is built on complaints. So if someone complains against you, then you get a phone call, or you get a letter, or you get a visit. If CPS believes that it's like a really serious issue, then they'll do an in-person visit. And so in those situations, it's in the parent's best interest to be, it's in the family's best interest to be respectful to CPS and rational and normal to CPS. So, you know, you don't do things like slam the door in their face or, you know, tell them to get lost. You know, you just don't. What you do instead is you calmly, you know, have a conversation with them and request that you have the presence of your advocates. And so, for example, if they're at, if they say, well, can we come and take a look around? You say, no, I'd like my lawyer to be here. And in that case, and even if you don't have a lawyer, just say, I'd like my lawyer, and then go get a lawyer. You know, go get a lawyer who knows this CPS law. And then same thing for medical. You know, if the CPS is asking you medical questions, you know, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? Well, I'd like to discuss that with my primary care physician. You know, we're not required to be experts in things. And so I think that's important for parents to know that, you know, CPS is a process, and that having advocates who can help navigate that process is in the whole family's best interest, including the child. Because when you look at examples where parents and children are separated by CPS, some of these children it ruins their lives. I mean, it is in the best interest of the child to have advocates step in, lawyers and doctors step in for that child to say, look, we're going to keep this family together, and we're going to protect this family. Yeah, CPS is incredibly dangerous, incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, it's very scary, and I'm concerned because my doctor's real pushy, and I just don't know what he'll do. But, Greg, I want to thank you for your time today, and again, I want to direct our listeners to physiciansforinformedconsent.org, and if anybody knows of any full informed consent doctors who would like support and would like to be part of the community of doctors and scientists and people that are for full informed consent, they can absolutely go there and become a member, and they will always have that support. So is there anything else you'd like to talk about today, Greg, before I let you go?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much, and just ask you a quick question about your own background. So you've come quite a long way from your roots in Wyoming, right?
I have. I left there before I graduated high school, and I went to Texas, and I finished high school there, and then I traveled for a good bit of time to figure out where I wanted to live. I want to live in California. So I landed in Ventura. I was a bartender for more than 20 years, and then I met my husband, and he works at a local casino, and he worked his way up the ladder, and he's in upper management. We bought a house in Santa Maria, Santa Barbara County, and right away we got started on a family, and my son was born, and at 2 months he got his 7 vaccines that made his brain swell, and he was diagnosed with autism. He had a reaction after every round, and, you know, I wanted to be the best parent I could be, so, of course, I took my kid to that doctor's appointment early, and, you know, I did everything I was supposed to do. I was a new mom. I'd never been around children, and I was absolutely, like probably every parent, I was all about my kid and doing the best thing I could for him and downloading my brain to his so he could learn everything I knew, and we would play all day. I have the luxury of getting to stay home with my children. So then I became an advocate when my son was diagnosed with autism. I started learning education law, special education law, so I could help my kid get his needs met in the community, and I wanted everybody else to have their needs met too. I wanted to help other people. The Autism Society of Santa Barbara helped me, and I decided to pay it forward. And I spent several years organizing autism resource fairs and having educational presentations from the area board, who is kind of a watchdog that makes sure our kids get their needs met in the community and at school. And I started learning about special education law, which is really interesting, because it parallels civil rights, you know, but they're separate. So, but I've always been really interested in civil rights. And so I wasn't very good at special education law, and I started learning more and more about what happened with my son. I mean, I saw it before my eyes, and I just couldn't put my finger on it, and my doctor kept telling me I was wrong. you know, that it wasn't the vaccines. And even though I saw it right after the vaccine, he would react by sleeping for several days. He'd get a fever, get swelling at the site. And then he would scream for several days, and the doctor would say, oh, no, that's perfectly normal. That's colic. You know, and I went through period where I was really, really, really depressed. I went through a grieving process, and then I got really mad. And that's when I started activating, and I went on Facebook, and I had never had a computer before, and I went on Facebook and I friended everybody that had a autism awareness ribbon. And I've just been doing it now for 10 years and aligning myself with people that I respect and value. And, you know, I just, there's so much information and people have been working so hard for so long that I just want to bring those people to the forefront who have been fighting for 20, 30 years,
yeah.
You know, and there's no point in reinventing the wheel. We have these people that are superheroes in my heart that have worked so hard and are still fighting. So, you know, Wayne Rohde, he's been doing it for a long time. He wrote a book about the vaccine court, you know. And that was one of my favorite interviews because I learned so much. And the Geyers got into the vaccine safety data link, and that's another story that nobody's talking about that is so important. And I'm just trying to dig up these things that have been going on for so long. And with SB277, we have all these newbies coming in that aren't parents and vaccine-injured children, but they're for parental rights. And they're helping us, and we appreciate that. But we do not have to reinvent the wheel because this work has been done already, and all we need to do is bring it to the forefront so we can share it with others. And
yeah. You know, there's been so much done by the autism community to educate and also in terms of advocacy. And one of the things that occurred to me recently is that autism is not bad. Autism is an opportunity. It is a change in perspective on family and on life. And when a child has autism, it changes the whole family dynamic. And it is creating a situation where the parents are encouraged to bring the child out of the standard paradigm of, you know, like learn the state capitals in second grade and changing the whole way that we learn. And when you do that with a child who's autistic, you're going to find that it brings you into a whole different paradigm of education. That includes music and hands-on activities and nature and, you know, learning trades and, you know, learning specialty type activities. And that is a golden opportunity to change not just the autistic child's life, but the whole family's life, you know?
Yeah, but it's not like that in every family because some of these kids have seizures 24/7. They're so unhealthy and they're, you know, I mean, they're not even potty trained and they're 25. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, that's why I fight because I can, because these other parents are wiping up blood and feces from their adult children, and they can't leave the house, and they're devastated. They're so devastated. They're out of money.
And stuck in a paradigm of devastation. And I think that, you know, when we rethink what's possible about living, I think that it can be helpful to get out of the paradigm where we need to continually go toward things that are system-based, you know, where we are
Greg? Hello? Okay, kids, I think I lost Greg, so I'm going to say goodbye. And, well, here he is, so I'll just pick him up right now. Greg?
Yes.
Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, just to recap what I was saying, that the system in many ways is one size fits all. It's meant to say, you know, you go to school and you learn this in this grade, or you go to the hospital and you receive this care. But what I'm saying autism is it's an opportunity for families to reinvent their own education and healthcare. So just as autism has a spectrum, there's going to be a spectrum of ways to create opportunities from the different perspectives. So, you know, you might have a family with an autistic child who learns really well in nature or wants to do trades, and then the whole family moves out into the country and does, you know, some type of organic living. And it doesn't just change the life of that autistic child. It changes the life of the whole family.
Yeah.
And autism is meant to be this, you know, conventional world labels autism as this stigma or this disorder or this problem. But I really want the autism community to rethink that and consider an opportunity to be to rethink learning, to rethink living, because I think our world needs that in a major way right now. You know, when I look at a conventional teenager who maybe doesn't have autism and is kind of a, let's just say, like a public school punk, and they are, you know, just addicted to their phone, addicted to the computer, you know, and maybe even experimenting with things like, you know, prescription drugs that they find, you know, is that child more likely to thrive and be successful and healthy in this world? Or is it the family with the autistic child who moved out into the country and is now living organically? You know, I think that's when we rethink autism in that context, autism is an opportunity and not a disorder.
Yeah, I know, Greg, but a lot of families just don't have for instance, with me, my journey has taken me to so many different places, and it's just about an awakening. You know, if we can be awake straight from the gate and take our kid out to the country and go all organic, that would be awesome. But it's taken me several years to learn about organic food or you know, it's just taken a long time for me to get to where I am now. And, you know, so, you know, I think in the perfect world, that would be great. But there's a lot of parents just really struggling to just get their kid healthy. You know, I mean, our kids are not healthy. So,
yeah. And I think if we look in the course of human history, we find that when families wait for the perfect world to come to them, they don't achieve it, but rather this world is just filled with beautiful pockets of space and time where you make things work for you. And so you have to go out and create it. And it all begins in the mind. It all begins with perspective. It begins with changing, you know, when something happens, not seeing it as bad, you know, and like not labeling something as, oh, this is bad, this is a disorder, but rather seeing the possibility, the opportunity in everything, seeing how every single thing that happens is for our benefit if we just see the opportunity in it.
Yeah. You know, like when my kid was diagnosed, I definitely saw the time when my child was playing with me and my child was open and happy. And I saw, you know, the child that wouldn't look at me anymore and wouldn't play with me. And it was like, that little kid that I knew was totally gone, and it was very devastating for me. And I had to go through this grieving process, and I lost my son. So that's just how it went. But I think it would be hard for most people who lose their children to this autism or this vaccine-induced autism to really turn it around and make it a really positive thing would take a Christ-like person to be able to do something like that, you know. And we all strive to be the best that we can be, but I'm a long way from that person. So, you know, and I don't know that most families that are blindsided by this would, maybe some do, I don't know, but a lot of the families I know, their kids are just so sick that and they're tapped of any kind of resources. They just don't have any money.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and plus, you know, one parent has to stay home with the affected child. You know, we can't get a job because we have to look after our children. So there's always one parent at home, and there's only just one income coming in, and that's probably enough to pay your mortgage or your rent and food, and there's not a lot of extra money, especially, I don't know, I paid an advocate because I needed to learn, and I didn't trust myself to go to an IEP by myself when there were 16 of them and only one of me. I needed some backup, you know, and so I spent a lot of money on an advocate to help me there until I felt confident enough to. I still have an advocate that comes with me when I feel like I need help, and I've been doing this for a while, and I still, you know, need help. So,
that's
kind of how it is. But, and I'm fortunate. I'm one of the lucky ones, you know, so. Greg,
well,
are you still there?
Yeah.
There
when, it comes to,
okay.
when it comes to income restrictions and, you know, thinking that money limits us, I think that that can be part of our reality in the sense that, you know, if we believe that we are limited by money, then we will be. I would say that there are a ton of opportunities out there in the world. For example, if you go to intentionalcommunities.org, you can find communities which are just have opened their doors and have said, we want people, you know. Even if you don't have money, we just want people. And we want you to live in our community of like-minded individuals, and we want to help, and you can help us. And so I think that that kind of thinking out of the box, you know, whether you do it or not, you know, it doesn't even matter whether you go to intentionalcommunities.org and actually, like, go live on a farm. I'm not saying that you actually do it. It's just the fact of thinking about it, just knowing that that's possible, can be paradigm-changing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wish I had thought of that a long time ago, you know. And it's still not too late. I mean, because every day, you know, we're shifting in the way we eat, in the way we think, in the way we talk to other people, in the way we look at ourselves. Every day, everything's changing, you know, and it's all, you know, around our families. So if that makes any sense, but.
Yeah,
we're getting there, Greg. We are.
All right.
You know, and I wish I would have had that mindset when my child was 3 years old. I wish. I wish I'd had the wherewithal to know that, you know. So,
well,
but there's still hope. There's still a lot of hope.
You know,
maybe it's a transition. Maybe we're holding the door for these other people to go there, you know, straight away. You know, maybe maybe that's how it will turn out.
Carpe diem.
So that's awesome. I'd love to do that. Now if I could just get my husband on board. Greg, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really enjoy talking to you. Whenever I talk to you, I'm just fascinated by the law and civil rights and this vaccine issue in the state of California and everywhere else. There's all these bills popping up. So, of course, I want to protect our freedom, and I want to do what I want as far as my family's health. You know, I want to be able to go see any doctor I want to see, and I don't want to have to be forced into going to those well baby visits. And if they give me any problem, I'm going to call you. Thank you so much, Greg, and I hope to talk to you soon. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, Candace.
All right. Bye-bye.
You too.